We're back with another edition of the Federalist Radio Hour. I'm Emily Jashinsky, culture editor here at the Federalist. As always, you can email the show at radio@thefederalist.com. Follow us on Twitter at FDRLST and make sure to subscribe wherever you download your podcasts as well. Today, I'm happy to be joined by my colleague, Eddie Scarry, DC columnist for the Federalist. Eddie, welcome back.
Hello. Happy to be here.
Yeah, of course. I feel like the listeners don't get quite enough Eddie, nor enough of the Eddie Scarry personality. So please, Eddie, just be completely unfiltered. I can't believe I even would have to say that to you.
I will do my best to be, yes, like the we're going to go raw today. Raw Eddie.
Yeah, actually, I don't need to tell Eddie to be unfiltered. He has a history of being unfiltered that predates my time in Washington, D.C. But that being said, we wanted to talk about there's some mounting evidence of something really serious happening, I think particularly among young people, middle school and high school age people, but that are now, I think, aging into their 20s. And it was, I think, put into helpful perspective by a thread from Libs of TikTok. And I will say that I haven't independently verified every single anecdote on this thread or every single point on this thread, but there appear to be more than a dozen screenshots and pieces of evidence posted of public libraries and public groups in general, schools sponsoring drag queen story hours and other sort of attempts to bring trans ideology. It's weird that we're even conflating trans ideology and drag, because that's something that has kind of happened itself over the last 10 or so years. But bringing it up close and personally to children and in a lot of sort of taxpayer-sponsored formats. Eddie, did you get a chance to sort of glance through this thread?
I did. And yes, the other thing I would say about this is it's as you said, the trans ideology and kind of bringing itself to the level of drag, which is, you know, used to traditionally known, I guess, as like a sort of entertainment. But then you get into this gender bendy element, and then really at the heart of it is just sexual content. The fundamental element that kind of links all of it is just a sexual, just a sexual element to it. And I think that's where it becomes very troublesome, because again, we're talking about kids. But yes, I got a chance to look through it, and the Libs of TikTok account is really, at this point, has become indispensable for this particular issue. And you and I were talking about this just a moment ago, but I was remembering when I first became alerted to the idea that there were adults who were introducing quote unquote queer ideas into their classrooms, whether it be high school or middle school or even elementary school, shockingly. And it very well may have come from Libs of TikTok. I do know that I just kind of was secondhand or kind of passively absorbing this stuff, where I would see little clips of teachers who say, who introduce themselves in a TikTok. I don't have a TikTok, but you know, that stuff often gets populated on Instagram and or Twitter, and often in some cases. So I was seeing these clips of teachers who would introduce themselves on a video and say, I'm a they them, and I the way I introduce queer content to my kids in classrooms is by putting rainbows everywhere. And then we talk about our pronouns, and then we talk about moms and dads and how sometimes there's two moms and two dads and what that means. And, you know, I always thought it was kind of weird. I thought just like, why were there any teachers that thought that that was something that needed to be said? And then I guess just in the back of my mind, I thought, well, this is just the general tendency of the left, which is to be very self-obsessed and narcissistic in a lot of ways. But then as the Libs of TikTok account became, which I guess is predominantly on Twitter. Is that right?
Yeah. Yep. It's mostly on Twitter.
So yeah, like I started seeing that more and more, and then I noticed that the content was there and they were really highlighting these accounts. And so when they had, and kind of like you saying you hadn't independently verified it, oftentimes I saw these clips, or even sometimes they're not even clips from TikTok. They're oftentimes they're looking at web pages, school district web pages, or specific schools or web pages, and this is the curriculum, or this is a page that they have on their website. And I would think that can't possibly be real. And I would click it. And then usually Libs of TikTok is actually really, really good about citing where they got their material from. The yes. next tweet in the thread is the link to it, or they tell you the name of the school. And in my experience, 100% of the time, retrace it back, research it back to the footnote, to the citation, and you will see that if it hasn't been deleted, now schools are catching on that we can let's delete that real quick. But you know, you can otherwise pretty much, in, like I said, in my experience, 100% of the time find it. So this account, Libs of TikTok, has been really, really indispensable. It has become really indispensable about talking about this issue.
Yeah, and I wish that there were a way to quantify a lot of this, but there just truly is not. You have to, I mean, Libs of TikTok at this point has like hundreds and hundreds of examples that mostly check out because they're cited directly, as you say, Eddie, to a school district's website, a public library's website. I'm looking right now at one of the tweets in this thread. Libraries in Cambridge, Massachusetts, Chicago, Amesbury, Mass., and Davenport, Iowa are all holding drag queen events for kids. These libraries are all publicly funded. Not everything in this thread is from public funding. It says the first one in it is a gay nightclub in Minnesota held a drag show for children earlier this month. One of the performers said in an interview, quote, "I want to give the kids an opportunity to see what drag queen king life is like on a day-to-day basis." This is a preschool in Massachusetts hosting drag queen story time. There's a lot of really interesting stuff in the thread. It's not all just drag queen story hour, even though that's pretty interesting in and of itself. There's some quotes, like I'm looking at one. Here's Western Vermont, a public library, had a drag queen story hour for all ages with stories focused on gender and activism. They write, quote, "Drag queen story hour captures the imagination and play of the gender fluidity of childhood." So this is clearly a concerted effort to introduce children to drag. And Eddie, I want to ask now about how drag became this educational weapon came to be seen as this educational tool, weapon, whatever you want to call it, for the sort of LGBT cause. It's interesting because drag has been predicated on being subversive for basically its existence in America over the last half century as it started to really proliferate. It was about the binary. You couldn't transgress those boundaries without the boundaries existing. So to create drag as something about gender fluidity is automatically undermining what it is. And it used to sort of thrive and being this underground subversive art that, you know, people would enjoy for the fact that it, you know, upended norms, not that it sought to destroy the norms. I mean, you need the norms to exist to have drag existing in the way that it's existed for so long. What on earth do you think made this art form that really used to be a performance art, basically? Why are people trying to turn it into a normalized lifestyle?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. And just first, in case it's helpful for any of our listeners, any of our audience, to know that I am a gay man. So I have some insight to this that may not be experienced by some others. But it's interesting in the sense that, yes, one, as you were saying, it was supposed to be this raunchy and I think this can't be emphasized enough, purely adult form of art and entertainment.
Yes.
Right. And I can tell you, the first time I ever saw a drag show was my freshman year of college. I'm 18 plus. And then I remember there being a kind of an event of some kind at my school, at my college, that was just highlighting the different forms of drag. So just talking about, well, this is campy drag, and this is drag that's meant to that's purely based on humor. This is drag that's meant that you're actually supposed to not be the man is supposed to be dressed and made up in a way that you're as close as possible to what you would think of as a woman. And it was, you know, it's kind of an interesting idea, but again, for adults. When it comes to the child aspect, I'm kind of at a loss, just as you are, as to why this became a thing that we need to teach children about this and expose children to these, to this, again, art form, entertainment form that is, has traditionally been so raunchy and, as you said, transgressive, that you would not in a sane world, no adult would want their parents exposed to it. I can only
imagine.
Or their
kids exposed to it. You said their parents.
Oh, I'm sorry. their children. Well, maybe their parents too.
I'm not sure.
Cases,
I'm not sure if I would want my parents to express that either.
Right. I don't think I'd be taking my parents to a drag show, especially these days. But no, I did mean their kids. My best guess, and I think the pattern would show, and the evidence would show, is that it became this vessel for explaining the idea that gender is a set thing and it's based in science. No, well, you can actually be whatever you want to be. See, I pretend to be a woman on stage, but not only am I pretending, I actually believe I'm a woman. And kind of going back to your original point about this is that show, RuPaul's Drag Race, that is just, that's supposed to be based on men. I think all of them were gay.
Yes.
But they, you know, it was men who go in and they compete in drag, which means you dress up as a woman, right? They suddenly, over the course of the last, I don't even watch the show, I just happen to know this from friends who tell me about it, they started putting transgender women, so these are men who then believe, they claim to now be women, are now competing as drag queens. Kind of defeats the whole point of what it means to be a drag queen, if you take them at face value. So yeah, even the concept of drag, I can imagine the 70s and 80s and even 90s and probably even early the aughts of the 2000s, those drag folks looking at this and saying, what? No, this is not, this was never what that was supposed to be. And I bet if anyone asked them, they would, but our culture is now, the left side of our culture is shifting in this way that's meant to blur the line between what it means to be transgender and what it actually is to be drag anymore.
All right, I have some good news for everyone who's tired of buying from companies that don't share your values and, in fact, in many cases, hate your values. I know that's pretty much everyone. If you're tired of buying from these large, woke international corporations, think like Coca-Cola and Starbucks, who sell you carbonated sugar water and overpriced coffee, the good news is that there is an alternative. You can throw a tea party. Gold River Trading Company is an American company that offers premium alternatives for Americans who enjoy a delicious cup of tea. Cool down with a pitcher of Gold River Trading Company's crisp and refreshing iced tea. Start your day with Gold River's invigorating 1776 American Breakfast Blend, or unwind with chamomile herbal tea. Explore a variety of high-quality blends and enjoy a healthy, flavorful alternative from an American company that shares your values. Blended and packed in the USA, you can support American workers and American manufacturing by shopping at Gold River Trading Company. Gold River is pro-freedom, pro-America, Christian, and anti-cancel culture. So go to goldriverco.com and save 10% off all orders using our discount code Federalist at checkout. Right, and obviously the Libs of TikTok thread is collecting examples that are prolific right now because June is now celebrated as Pride Month around the country. And so you'll expect to see, I think, a lot more of this over the course of June as it's, you know, even more front and center in society and all of the companies sort of rushing to get their sponsorship in at the Pride parades and to celebrate Pride in all of their individual ways. It's become extremely corporatized and extremely sort of mainstream establishment. And in some sense, that was sort of always the goal. But in another sense, I think the transgender it was always the goal of the LGBT movement. But so in some sense, as you say, sort of mission accomplished there. But the transgender, adding that T to LGBT and then expanding what that T is, has thrown a huge wrench, I think, in that. I guess that agenda, it's really changed the conversation. When we're talking about LG in the same context that we're talking about B and T, as we are in just about every one of these contexts, we're talking about very, very different things because that in particular, the T has been used to create the sort of sexual fluidity, gender fluidity in schools and aimed at children. And Eddie, I'm kind of curious for your perspective on how different those two halves, the first half and the second half of the LGBT, have come to be.
Yeah. And, you know, I would say that this even started before I even became an adult, because I know when I went into college, I made a real effort to be to join the gay and lesbian, we called it global. And I forget what that actually understood or what it stood for at my school, but it was the gay and lesbian bisexual alliance and straight alliance, something to that effect.
Oh yeah.
But right. I gave it a real shot to join the people only simply for the fact that I was gay, and thought, oh, okay, so we're all kind of in on this, and this is the one thing we have in common. So we at least have that in common, and we can, maybe that can lend itself to some sort of friendship or whatnot. But then I came to realize very, very quickly, in this experience, that no, that does not really count for much when you actually have different ideas about other things. And I think there is this, and what I mean is views on politics. And there is this this overwhelming pressure and atmosphere and environment in groups like this. And I feel very confident that I'm speaking for the majority of them, organizations like this on college campuses and elsewhere, that it is, no, we have to liberalize everything and push the progressive agenda on everything. It's not just the fact that we're gay or lesbians or bisexual or I think the new thing now is quote unquote queer. We are going to have to, and if you're not with us on any given issue that's pushed by the far left, and when I say far left, I simply mean the Democratic Party. If you're not going to be with us on pushing those issues, then you're not one of us whatsoever. Otherwise, I would say there is a very substantial portion of we'll just say non-heterosexual part of the world, part of America, that looks at this stuff and feels like it really has gone too far. Ultimately, and I think most importantly, is we're talking about children and the breaking in of children to sexual topics when they're, and you know, as young as kindergarten in many cases, but otherwise, just so much of it is just so on its face stupid and bizarre. You know, starting with, for example, the whole queer, it became LGBTQ. Like, queer just simply became, and I think all of our listeners and our audience would understand that. Almost every single person in Hollywood let's say D-lister in Hollywood, suddenly has to come out as queer these days. And they get a nice front page on People Magazine, Vanity Fair, Vogue. Oh, this person comes out as queer or non-binary. And, you know, I would think most people have caught on at this point that is nothing. It doesn't mean anything. Those people are giving up nothing. They're now adults and they're fully independent adults, rich adults in I think most cases. And yet it doesn't, they don't have to say, oh, I've been oppressed in any kind of way, but they get that ticket. They get a ticket that says I've been oppressed because I'm non-heterosexual or non-binary. And I think that, in a lot of ways, that extends to the trans issue other than the children, which is the most important. The trans issue is unique in the sense of, I try to explain this to people whoever come to me and say, well, as a gay man, don't you think that you also suffered these setbacks? So why do you think in any way that you have to deny trans people? Well, look, I reject that that framing, first of all. But two, the fundamental difference between let's just say gay and trans people is that for gay people, this was a matter of just acceptance. Just accept that I exist. You don't have to do anything. Your life isn't going to change one bit whether I'm gay or not. It would make absolutely no difference in your life. You have to do absolutely nothing different. You don't have to arrange your furniture. You have to do nothing. For trans people are not asking for acceptance. They're asking for accommodation. They're asking that we be allowed in your sports. They're asking that we be allowed to use the restroom that we want. They're asking that taxpayer, if they're in the military, taxpayer-funded surgeries to transition and hormones, those kinds of things. That affects everybody. That's not just an issue of acceptance anymore. That's accommodation. So just back to my main point is there are many people I think that are like me who, and I have talked to them here in Washington, D.C., where I live. I have talked to them and they do give some indication even if it's a little bit shy, they are kind of coming around to the idea that something has gone wrong here and it's gone a little bit too far.
Yeah. And I'm sort of certain we disagree on like a lot of the LG stuff, Eddie, but like the way that this has happened over the last, I don't know, 10 years, especially towards children, as you say, it's this, like the T has just become this catch-all in a very strange way. And then specifically packaged for children with the messaging that this is essential to sort of their mental health and to deconditioning them from the patriarchy and whatever else. And you have zeroed in, I think, recently and rightfully on TikTok's role in all of this. I think you actually just recently watched a documentary that added some perspective there. Why do you think it is that TikTok in particular is basically a what's the best word I can use? You probably have a better word here, but it is just sort of like constantly enabling this messaging and I don't know, conversion, transformation of kids.
Yeah, so I would be speaking more, I would be well more informed on this if I had a TikTok. But I will tell you, based on one, things I've read, and two, things that people who do have TikTok have told me, some of which with literally within the last like 2 weeks, I've learned about what the appeal of TikTok is. So first of all, I'll say one, yes, there's a lot of, and this is just briefly aside, I wanted to get to this and I don't want to forget it, is the backlash to, I guess you would say the backlash to the backlash of the trans issue, especially with regards to children, is really fascinating to me, because there actually has been this full body of stuff out there, whether it be social media or whether it be documentaries or short docuseries specifically with regard to children. But even if you were to talk about adults, about the trans issue. And I think it was when it started to touch, probably the wrong word, when it started to when it started to bleed into,
that's what I meant about Eddie's personality.
When it started to bleed into the lives of children, and people are realizing this is being taught in public schools, taught to their children without their knowledge, that's when it became an issue. Because otherwise, I think most people say, you know what, you're an adult, do whatever you want, I don't care, that's not my business. We are at that point as a society where we just say, you make your own choices. If you want to mutilate your genitals, fine. If you want to pump your body full of hormones, you're an adult, that's fine. But now it's suddenly we're talking about children. And as people became aware of it, there was this pushback that said, no, wait, no, now you're talking about my child and I'm not okay with that. And then suddenly, suddenly the left that had thought they were very comfortable and safe doing all this stuff, now they're all upset about it and calling it bigoted and whatnot. And I think that that's interesting. And I actually encourage every parent, especially of young children that's listening to this, if you have streaming services, Netflix, HBO, Hulu, there are documentaries and shows where you can see, this is the great thing about the Federalists, we're paid to do this stuff. I would do it in my free time anyway, but I watch these things and I am absolutely appalled and shocked at the things that, these are not meant to shock you. These documentaries are not meant to in any way startle you. This is kind of like they're explaining away like, oh, this is what's going on in the world. But you look at it and you're like, oh my God, I had no idea. That this was one of those moments while I was just like maybe two or three nights ago, I saw this CBS about a 30-minute documentary. So it was pretty short. Just about talking about, it was looking at like four different transgender kids who claim to be transgender. And I at least two of them, but I think all of them said, I specifically remember the one young girl who believes she's a boy now said, I thought I was a lesbian. I just thought I was a lesbian. I thought it was weird. But then I got on TikTok and started looking up quote unquote queer content. And that's when I found out about transgender and like my genders are different. You know, they're not really real. And I can be whatever I want to be and whatever I feel like. And I think just because of the nature of TikTok being new and that's where the younger people are. And also my understanding, you might correct me if I'm wrong on this, if you have one, but I was just told, it was just explained to me that TikTok has a very, very unique way of making specific things, the more controversial, the better, is what I'm told, making those things go viral. So the more divisive or controversial it is, or in any kind of way, like a hot topic, I guess you might say, those videos and that type of content just seem, I don't know if they set it with the algorithm or what it is, but those things just tend to pick up speed. They get all these views and they just they attract a lot of attention on this app. That's the way it was explained to me. But just, I guess the way that it's categorized, TikTok has really done, the people who produced that app, they have done a really, really good job of making it very addictive, and specific types of content are being elevated in a way that's, I think exposing more kids to this issue.
Yeah. So this is, I mean, we have done podcasts on this before because TikTok is a Beijing based company. Its parent company is based in Beijing. They claim TikTok is entirely based in the US. We know that that's not completely true. We know that ByteDance is operated in Beijing, that there are members of the Chinese Communist Party in many positions across the company. And we know that they that the Chinese version of the app is run very differently, and that kids have mandatory pauses. They get a host of government propaganda on it. And I'm not suggesting we do the same in America, but only suggesting they sort of know what this technology is capable of. And I would not be shocked in any way whatsoever to find that they are using the algorithm sort of as a cultural weapon in many ways to increase divisions in America. If you look at what the actual sort of Russian election meddling was in 2016, it was like dumb Facebook memes that were meant to meant to inflame some of these cultural tensions. If you've looked at them, they're kind of hilarious, but that's sort of where these other people see our weak points being. And now, Eddie, I was looking today at a new study by Eric Kaufman that found a lot of things, but he says the last decade has seen a precipitous rise in the share of Americans identifying as LGBT, particularly among the youngest adults. Today, among those under 30, a wide range of surveys converge on a number of around 20%. He has all kinds of findings in the survey, but he says overall, the data suggests that while there have been an increase in same-sex behavior in recent years, sociopolitical factors likely explain most of the rise in LGBT identity. And the reason that sort of LG and then BT part of that are so different is because I would suspect the sociopolitical factors have mostly been contributing to people identifying as bisexual and transgender. But, you know, that's why you haven't seen the rise, the same rise you might see with identification and same-sex activity. So I definitely consider my incessant skepticism both a blessing and a curse. It's a blessing in journalism for sure. But as I've watched all of these MyPillow ads over the years, I have just been plagued by the question, are these as good as the commercials say they are? I've always wondered this. And when the fine folks over at MyPillow were kind enough to send me some of their products, I was really pleasantly surprised. These things are great. And right now they're having a BOGO extravaganza. So you can buy one, get one free price on the MyPillow bed sheets as low as $59.98, the Elegance MyPillows as low as $49.98, and that six-piece towel sets. Those are my favorite. Those are included in the BOGO extravaganza. Also, the Roll and Go Anywhere MyPillows for $29.98 and so much more. Those six-piece towel sets are made with cotton grown here in the United States. Other towels feel good but don't absorb, or they absorb but they don't feel good. Every MyPillow towel is made from proprietary technology that makes them highly absorbent and soft to the touch. I can confirm that. It's absolutely true. Like I said, these are my favorites. They have no lotiony feel either. Every set comes with two bath towels, two hand towels, and two washcloths. So you got everything you need. They're available in a variety of colors and sizes, and they are machine washable and come with a 60-day money-back guarantee and a one-year limited warranty. Those Roll and Go Anywhere MyPillows, you can use them on your couch, your recliner, or in your car. They're versatile enough to take on vacation or really anywhere you go. They're also available in multiple colors and patterns and machine washable and dryable for all you parents. That's the most important part. They come with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee as well. So as you can see, it's a buy one, get one extravaganza over at mypillow.com/Federalist. Bed sheets and MyPillows are just the tip of the iceberg. Find the full list of BOGO offers by visiting mypillow.com/Federalist or call 800-794-8429. Stock up with buy one, get one free savings today and get Mike's book free with any purchase. MyPillow.com/Federalist or call 800-794-8429. MyPillow.com/Federalist. How do you interpret those findings?
Well, what about queer? What did it say about that? Because again, I think this, and I'm asking you genuinely, because I think that, again, that has become this, you're kind of like you were saying, transgender is a catch-all thing. I think even more so is the label queer, because that's just, you know, yes. I think Janelle Monáe is the one who I always think of, the celebrity. I think she's a singer. She got up and I don't know if it was before the Grammys or after, she came out as queer. And yet there is absolutely nothing about her that struck me as any different right now. I saw no change in her. She still looks like a woman. She wears makeup. She's an attractive girl, actually. So I think that there is something to this queer thing. I'm curious, actually, I wanted to, if you know anything, if there was something about that, was there anything about the idea about queer?
I don't believe so, but here's an interesting thing to your point. The most popular LGBT identity is bisexual, which is significantly more common among women than men. When we look at homosexual behavior, we find that it has grown much less rapidly than LGBT identification. Men and women under 30 who reported a sexual partner in the last 5 years dropped from around 96% exclusively heterosexual in the 1990s to 92% exclusively heterosexual in 2021, whereas in 2008, attitudes and behavior were similar. By 2021, LGBT identification was running at twice the rate of LGBT sexual behavior. So I think those numbers would be higher, Eddie, if this had included queer in the definition, because it does seem, you see this actually on Libs of TikTok, a whole lot of people identifying as queer. And we'll get into, I think, why when I'll bring up another data point from the survey in just a second. But I do think you're correct that it would expand these numbers even more. I don't know how much more, but somewhat. I do think also, though, it's interesting that you have same-sex behavior, you have identification as, you know, in these categories of queerness, LGBT in general, just way outpacing the same-sex behavior, the rise in like actual same-sex behavior.
Yeah, and I would say that there are probably, I mean, we're getting very sociological here, and at this point I would be kind of just from patterns and trends I've seen as I've grown through the years, as media, especially social media is everything now. I think that there are the younger especially generation, but I would say it has changed the attitudes of older people too. A person might look at a survey and or a question on a survey that says, "Are you gay or straight, or would you consider yourself strictly heterosexual sexual?" And I would say that I gather that more women are more likely to say one thing than men are likely to say, but I think both genders would say,
both sexes.
Both sexes, yes. Let's be very technical. Both sexes would say, you know what? Yeah, would I kiss a man? Like, if it's a man, would I kiss a man? Sure. Woman, I would kiss a woman. Sure. Would I, like, hug? You know, any of those things. I think that there is this attitude shift that has happened where people look at that and say, it doesn't threaten me. I don't feel threatened by engaging in non-traditional, and I'm not saying sex in any way, and I'm not saying also that these people would feel any kind of romantic link to the same sex. I think that it's just people, their attitudes have become more liberal on this. So I look at these kinds of polls and think, okay, are we really talking about people who honestly are engaged in any kind of same sex activity that is in any way, sexual, like really sexual or not. I just look at, you know, the whole thing with like boys painting their nails, for example, that's become a trend. You know, you see them wearing earrings and those kinds of things and wearing, you know, it would have been growing up. I would assume the same thing for you. Growing up, a boy would have not worn a crop top. A straight a heterosexual boy would not have worn a crop top. Now you see heterosexual boys wearing that type of stuff on social media, young boys, like, you know, high school. So I think that there has just been this general attitude shift about those things, and it becomes kind of trendy and cool. But the real issue is that there are other studies that show that the spike really where it matters is the trans thing, because that's where you start getting into the kids want to now ask their parents for hormone therapies and puberty blockers and in some cases even surgeries, and many of the parents are dumb enough to actually hand the keys over to the kid and go along with that stuff. So, you know, that this trend and this poll you're talking about is alarming when you start getting into that area.
Yeah, exactly. And as you say, let's take the crop top example. As you say, heterosexual boys who identify as trans or queer wearing crop tops. So they may not be engaged in any like same sex romantic behavior, but they may also identify as trans or queer in this very sort of broad sense that, by the way, I don't think is particularly helpful to people who suffer from gender dysphoria. Mm-hmm. It's just insane. Let me get to, and I think this really, I'm super curious for your take on this, Eddie, because I think this actually gets to a lot of what we're talking about. This is again from the Kaufman paper that just recently dropped. Among young people, mental health problems, liberal ideology, and LGBT identity are strongly correlated. Using factor analysis in two different studies shows that assuming one common variable between all three traits explains 40-50% of the variation. Okay, so the implication of that, that among young people, mental health problems, liberal ideology, and LGBT identity are strongly correlated, is extremely consequential. And one thing that stood out to me was particularly that this has happened in a decade in which there's been a large increase in the social and the political acceptance of, I think, the LGBT cause. So it seems like as people have gotten more favorable to the LGBT cause, more LGBT young people or people who identify as LGBT reported experiencing anxiety and depression. And this is in the Eric Kaufman study from CSPI, and Kaufman has been on this podcast before. Very liberal young Americans are twice as likely as others to experience anxiety and depression. 27% of young Americans with anxiety and depression were LGBT in 2021, and that relationship appears to have strengthened since 2010. So in the 12 years where the country gets more favorable to the LGBT cause, we see more people who identify as LGBT young people suffering, saying they suffer from anxiety and depression. That could have something to do with the pool expanding, the pool of people who identify as LGBT expanding. But it also seems, you know, sort of, I don't know, what's your take on this, Eddie?
I mean, so now we're getting into the psyche of the liberal mind, and a very dangerous place to go. But I mean, there are many, many said this is the discrepancy you're pointing out is new to me. The tendency and the pattern of liberals and leftist Democrats identify or rather self-professing that they have more anxiety or compulsions or neuroses, that I think you will see that replicated in studies going back many, 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 many years than other people, than conservatives or independents. You will see that. As far as the trans things go, I think that there is something to the idea of, I guess you could look at it in two different ways. One is that, well, this has worked, this drawing attention, like, for example, there was actually this is like totally related. There was a New York Times op-ed written by a trans woman. So this is a man who claims to be a woman. I want to say it was within the last 5-6 years. And he was saying how he is a woman and that ended, but being trans and really getting, and he had full surgeries, the full top and bottom surgeries to make himself look more like a woman, completely lives his life like he believes to be a woman. He yet still professed to having really deep depressive thoughts and really deep depression. I think that there is, on the one hand, kind of like you said, there's more people who identify, therefore the pool is expanding, and so you're getting more of that. And then on the other, there is, I believe, this is just a suspicion I have, that people, the more attention you get for claiming to be oppressed or to have been wronged or to have, like, you know, this is a thing you need to accept about me, and you get that attention, I think it kind of reinforces that pattern of behavior to keep claiming it. Because then you get more things happen to go your way. That's just the way the culture is working nowadays. I'm hoping people are coming more attuned to that and realizing we can only go so far and we can only put up with so much. But I would think that both of those things have something to do with it.
Yeah, I feel like for obvious reasons we are getting, especially young people are getting more mentally ill. But I also think, and I worry that we have pathologized a lot of, I guess, normal childhood proclivities.
Oh, sure.
And so I think we're sort of forcing mental illness or defining normal things as mental illness in ways that, not to get too meta, make people actually feel as though they're suffering when they're not. Because there can be an element of reality. If you tell somebody that they're suffering over and over again, and you define something normal as a mental illness, and you put them in that box, if you're a child and your brain isn't fully developed, and maybe even if you're an adult, but especially if you're a child and your brain isn't fully developed, you may actually experience some suffering. You've been told that you're suffering, even if you're not. You've been told that you're oppressed and repressed and suppressed in all of these different ways. And I think to some extent, you are creating mental illness in addition to those created by social media and alienation and all of that stuff, family breakdown. I feel like this actually does create suffering.
Yeah, Emily. And look, I think that when I listen to this, so this is, again, I always refer back to all this stuff that is in plain sight and people just have not been paying attention to it. And I think for a lot of people, they don't want to pay attention to it because it can be a really depressing subject, again, because we're talking about children. I wrote about this at The Federalist, an episode of The Daily, which is the daily episode of the New York Times podcast. It's called The Daily. They did one about transgender kids, and you had this not even 18 yet, transgender boy. So this is a girl who claims to be a boy. And she talked about how I didn't like that my chest was getting bigger. I didn't like my voice. I felt like, because she was started going, the very, very early stages of puberty, she felt like people were not going to see her as the tomboy she had always been. And so her mom is a lesbian, agreed to put her on hormone blockers. And so this young woman grew facial hair, her voice got deeper. And I just thought to myself, is it not normal to experience adolescence? I mean, I don't know about you, but I can say that going through adolescence, I felt very awkward. I was very self-conscious of when my voice dropped, when I started growing hair on my legs, when I started getting pimples. I thought these are all very, very, it made me so embarrassed and so self-conscious and shy. But I, thank God I never went to my parents and said, can we stop this? Can we put a halt on this? Can you put a pill in me that like stops all this? Because that's what so many parents are being tricked into. And there is, on the other side of this, there is a lot of literature out there about kids changing their mind. They then say, and when they're still kids, they're saying, it doesn't take them very long. It might be a couple years, but they then say, you know what? This wasn't the right call. I am a girl. I am a tomboy and I'm a lesbian, but I am a girl. The same thing for boys. You have the same thing. So Yes, I think when you have parents who suddenly start feeding into these ideas about their children who are not old enough to drive, not old enough to drink, not old enough to vote, should not be trusted with a number of things, suddenly start entrusting them with how they're going to tinker with their hormones and their body's natural chemistry, we're looking at something very, very alarming.
That's another really great point that when we are looking, it's not just for sort of 18-year-olds that have been told they're gender fluid or bisexual because they once, I'm not even going to get into it, but although it does seem that bisexuality, the incentive sort of culturally to be different and to have some type of pathology or to have some type of mental illness that we also want to destigmatize as not a mental illness. It's just a condition, but then you don't necessarily get the kind of plaudits for being brave and honest about your condition. The incentives have been stacked so much to be different, but to make being different normal. Mm-hmm. It seems like that has to have contributed to the rise in people who identify as bisexual who don't actually contribute to rates of same-sex behavior because they haven't really moved much over the last decade or whatever. Kaufman studied here, but yeah, it's true. I mean, these ideas obviously in and of themselves are victimizing children. In addition to the ways they're sort of with things we can't sort of quantify, changing the way kids see themselves and very deeply see themselves in the world and very deeply problematic with very deeply problematic effects. And Eddie, one thing I guess I just want to ask before we draw down here is or wind down here. For me, and probably some of the reasons that you and I would disagree on the LGB part, is that some of this always seems like it was the end goal and probably not of the entire movement, but just that it's a scorched earth, burned down all of the institutions and traditions, which is, I guess, gets into an interesting conversation when you want to talk about marriage and why, that institution, was, I think, changed in public perception. But so I would say a lot of this has been the end goal, that the scorched earth campaign against all traditional institutions, against our concepts of what is healthy sexuality, of our concepts of sex, of our concepts of marriage, of our concepts of men and women, all of those things was always kind of on the table here. So from my perspective, it explains why we saw after Obergefell the shift to children. Do you think any of that's true, or do you think this has just sort of been hijacked by the T interests that are making this pitch to children?
So I am not closed to the theory that you're putting forward. What I would encounter it in some kind of way was saying that the left does this stuff. I think that there is, there's a guy, this is very anecdotal, obviously, but he's old. He's like, as you, I'm sure, get anyone who ever goes on TV or anything like that, you end up with people on social media who they want to talk with you and they follow you. And, and Instagram is where I get a lot of that. This is an old guy in North Carolina. His name is Eric. And he grew up at the time when, the kind of the civil rights movement-ish, if you will, of gays, because, they were dealing with the AIDS thing and, just wanting to feel like they were part of normal society. He even has reservations. He has a lot of reservations, I'd say, particularly as it pertains to children and what children are taught. I think that there are a lot of well-meaning people, and I think that that's the overwhelming majority of Americans are very well-meaning and very innocent when it comes to taking up causes. And a good example would be the Black Lives Matter movement. I think that people join these things under an idea about it's one thing, but then they kind of start to, and you would see this in the Black Lives Matter movement, that suddenly something changes and you realize that this is not what I signed up for. So, you know, at the height of the George Floyd summer of 2020, it was an 80% approval of Black Lives Matter. By the end of the year, as you saw cities burned down, cops being defunded, cops quitting, cities becoming unsafer, suddenly the approval for Black Lives Matter drops to 40% or something like that. I would say the same thing kind of happens with, as far as it's a movement, the non-heterosexual crowd has had, which is, you know, you're looking, and that's why I frame it this way, which is gays and lesbians and maybe even bisexuals. It's, you know, just treat us like we're everyone else. And it doesn't cost you anything. You don't have to change any of your own, anything about your life. But suddenly the transgender thing becomes, now we're going to talk to your children. Now we need to use the bathrooms that we want to use. Now we need to get taxpayer funded genital mutilation and hormone therapy. Now we get to compete in your sports, whatever sports league we want, and crush crush the hopes and dreams of little girls out there. That's a completely different thing. And how that develops and how it comes along, I don't know. I mean, there's nothing these days that surprises me. So if this was always some goal, some insidious elements of the movement, if you want to call it that, it wouldn't surprise me. You could win me over any day. I've always just thought that with any political cause or issue, the overwhelming majority of people are very innocent and very well-meaning. And then suddenly they find out that, wait, there's a faction of this that has decided this means more than what I thought it meant, and I don't want to be a part of this anymore.
Yeah, I guess I just always wonder if you can have one without the other eventually. Like, if you can have one without it eventually turning into the other. Meaning, like, is there something inherent that leads to this because it is inherently a rebuke of institutions or traditional gender sex roles, I should say. But it sounds like you would disagree with that.
No, it's a fair point. And I mean, it kind of brings you to, I forget what's the law that's, if something isn't overtly and expressly a right-leaning or conservative organization, it's going to become a liberal one. Yes. Like that, I forget what that's called, but that's like a rule of thumb, basically. And I have never seen that not be true. So I think that there's that law is at play here. But I take that point that, yeah, if you might want to go up to a certain point, you might believe there's a certain a line that we can go up to, but there is always going to be people, no matter what the cause is, that want to take it much, much further than that. And honestly, I would say that you could find examples of that on the right as well. It's far more prevalent on the left, and the left is way more strategic and even devious about it. But yeah, any political cause, I have seen that to be true.
You know, I was just thinking today, I took a look at this thing from UNICEF. Did you see this, Eddie?
I don't think so.
So this isn't about like LGBT stuff, but it reminds me in some ways. So UNICEF cited this EU study that said some children reported that they were, quote, happy after seeing, quote, sexual images. And UNICEF cited that study as evidence that pornography isn't always, quote, harmful to children. And so that the logic is that something that makes you feel happy can't also be harmful. And like, this is clearly illogical. Like, it is not factual. It flies in the face of reason. We can talk about junk food to heroin to all kinds of different things, you know, unprotected sex, whatever it is. You can apply this logic to it and it fails on its face time and again. But there's this postmodern logic about moral relativism that just has overtaken everything, seems to really be the rot at the heart of telling kids, you know, that it's or telling parents that it's unhealthy for them to, you know, not expose their children to gender fluidity and drag. I mean, it's very bizarre logic, but it seems like almost there are no rules anymore, except for that you absolutely have to believe there are no rules.
Oh, yeah. No, 100%. I actually wrote a book very, very similar to this idea called Privileged Victims. So that's there. And I almost wrote a follow-up about this exact same idea, which was the premise was going to be, I didn't end up doing it, but because it was a little bit too close to my last one, to privileged victims. But the idea that there's all, you hear something like that, just like you're talking about showing children pornography, that might be a good thing. And you just think, you look at it and say, that is on its face so stupid. And I don't care what this study says, there's no way that makes sense. And you will find that you have to dig into the numbers. And then actually, I would actually even guess, you look into the numbers here, it's like, oh, all the children who said it was a good thing have been sexually abused, like something absurd. And I think that it's the same thing kind of with the argument, just to tie it back to the trans thing real quick, is with the trans kids, is the argument from the left is, well, it's actually harmful to the child to let them go through puberty if they're feeling like they're if they're feeling like they're not the sex they were actually born as. Well, I'm sorry. Is it harmful to let a child go through their body's natural biological chemistry? Like that you're telling me now it's harmful to let nature take its course? Like that is this freaky deaky science, let's play God kind of thing, tinkering with people's kids, no less, tinkering with their body's natural chemistry. It's just very, very creepy, very, very weird. And when you look at these things and someone telling you, oh no, this is the right thing, this is actually the more humane thing, this is the more evolved way of thinking, it's just, you look at it and you're like, you know what, you're so full of it, I don't even want to hear it anymore.
Well, yeah, there need to be more people willing to say that. But fortunately, Eddie has been one of those people for a very long time. And that's not to shame you as being old, Eddie, because you're not that old. You just, in fact, you're not old at all. You're not
that old. Wow.
You're not even much older than me. But it is to say that Eddie, like right away, like hit the ground running and has been a heterodox truth teller ever since. So Eddie, I think these are some of my favorite podcasts. Like sometimes we do it around a very specific news hook, but I like these conversations that are open-ended, and we kind of let the discussion take it where it goes, because it's very helpful to hash out these things, especially with somebody like you who's unafraid of having the conversation in the first place.
For sure. Best interviewer I know, Emily Jasinski.
Yeah, make sure you send that to Molly. Just the audio of that. Eddie Scarry, DC columnist at The Federalist. Eddie, where can people buy your books?
You can get that at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, but Amazon's your best bet. I think the best one, especially for this podcast, Privileged Victims. Look that one up, plus my name, and you will find it very quickly.
That's Scarry with two R's, Eddie Scarry. Go to his Amazon, get those books, and make sure to follow his work over at The Federalist. Eddie, thank you so much.
All right, thanks, Emily.
All right, you've been listening to another edition of the Federalist Radio Hour. I'm Emily Jasinski, culture editor here at The Federalist. As always, you can email the show at radio@thefederalist.com. Follow us on Twitter at FDRLST. We will be back soon with more. Until then, be lovers of freedom and anxious for the fray. You got me right where you are.